And we are live on Facebook on Augusta Free Press. I am Chris Graham, joined by Rod Mullins. And boy, you know, Rod, we don't have much to talk about today in NASCAR. They're just not an exciting race, not all the other stuff too. And as thrilling as the end of the Talladega race was on Monday, with cars literally knocking each other out of the way going across the finish line in a green-white checkered situation, we can't start there. We got to start with all the news about the stuff off the track in NASCAR involving Confederate flags and nooses found in garages and all that. So, Rod, what is the latest on the all the off the track news in NASCAR?
Question before we get started: do we have to start with this?
Yeah, I guess we kind of do.
This has been such a rough week, and I mean, first part of the week and everything with all the stuff that was going on at Talladega. What we know right now is that the FBI have finished their investigation, and they have found that there was no hate crime committed by the display of a noose, and I'll get into that here in just a second. They ruled that this alleged noose, or this way that this cord was tied up, was done back in the fall of 2019, or at least it can be remembered back in 2019. The Wood Brothers kind of gave some credence to that, and some video that has come on. I've been able to see some video on TV of the Wood Brothers there in their garage at Talladega. It shows clearly what looks like a noose from a distance, but it's one of those hand grips. It's a hand grip for you to be able to go and pull the garage door, you know, down, or pull that door down. It's been so funny because I've had a lot of people, I've had a lot of friends that really have kind of, I don't know, they've kind of in one way jumped on me. They kind of jumped on the media in general because they claim that we blew this stuff out of proportion. And I have to say right now, say what you want. We didn't blow it out of proportion. We took the information that was given to us by NASCAR and by reporters that were there that heard about this, witnessed it, or whatever the case may be, and relayed it on. That's simply what we did during the entire time. We were under the impression that this was possibly a hate crime, considering, I'm just going to be honest, you're going down in Alabama, you're going down in what was considered, when I was growing up, George Wallace territory. He was going to prevent segregation from, you know, he was going to prevent all this stuff from happening, of bringing both of the kids together in school and things like that. And, you know, he looked back on it eventually, and he said, I think on his pretty much a deathbed confession, he said, I was just simply doing what the people asked me to do. I was the governor of the state of Alabama. And, you know, I guess that stuff kind of played into the fact of what we had happen when the teams arrived on the weekend to get ready for the race. And this noose or whatever was spotted in the garage area. And then immediately it became a rally around Bubba Wallace thing. And I agree with that. I think that people need to rally around Bubba Wallace right now at this point. But there's been a lot of changes. This thing is kind of very fluid right now, and we don't really know the direction it's going in, except Bubba Wallace said last night, I think in an interview with Don Lemon on CNN, that, you know, he steadfastly is going to stick to what he's doing, that the sport needs to diversify. And I agree with that. But we're also in a situation too where NASCAR has come out and said, you know, this didn't happen. We're sorry about it. And Bubba also added that it was a little bit embarrassing that this thing had happened, but it still doesn't detract from the seriousness of the topic that we've been discussing at hand here, it seems like, for about the last week or so.
I will say that, in the context of everything that happened on Sunday, now the race happened on Monday eventually because the rain on Sunday pushed it, and then there was even rain on Monday that delayed the race a bit. In the context of everything else that happened on Sunday there was the first race with a lot of fans. 5,000 fans were allowed to be there. You had a display of Confederate flags lining the road leading into or going by the track, the super speedway there at Talladega. You had a plane flying overhead with a Confederate flag and a sign that said defund NASCAR.
Right.
In the context of all that, if you're a member of Bubba Wallace's crew, and apparently that's what happened. Bubba Wallace himself never saw the noose. The member of the crew sees something that looks like a noose in the garage. Well, it's not like it was just totally, oh yeah, well, nothing else happened here today except for that. It was sort of the cherry on top of the ice cream, maybe. I'm looking there for the analogy. And I'm a bit disheartened, to say the least, at the reporting of some folks on this now. The conservative blogosphere is taking this, comparing Bubba Wallace to Jesse Smollett, you know, the actor who, the disgraced actor now, who apparently engineered his own apparent beating to draw attention to himself and claiming it was a hate crime. Bubba Wallace didn't see this. He didn't ask for any of this.
No.
He was racing, and he wants to be a NASCAR driver. He's pretty good. He was running in the top three or four several laps to go before gas issues got to him, fuel issues got to him. But you know, just making him out to be something like he's an attention seeker here. I think the last thing Bubba Wallace wants out of any of this is this kind of attention. He wants to win a race and be the, you know, get attention in that realm. And so this is just so ugly. And it's gotten even uglier because of the response of folks on social media.
Yeah, I agree. It's gotten very ugly. And, you know, and some people in some ways have kind of, you know, I guess in one way where I'm kind of one of these reporters that go out, and I still, it's not like I have an office to go to every day, or I'm, you know, protected by that office per se. I kind of work out of home. But, you know, when you get your, you know, you've got your personal Facebook, and then you've also got your Facebook that you're using, which has convinced me now to kind of split it off a little bit more. But when you get your news and your information and some of your responses from some of your friends and some people out there saying, have you taken this a little bit too far? Have you done something with this? You kind of start scratching your head and wondering, saying, hey, look, I didn't do this. I'm just reporting what NASCAR sent to me or NASCAR provided. And again, we need to stress the facts. And there are people that have stretched the facts, or people have blown the facts completely out of the water. But one, Bubba Wallace did not find the noose. He did not come across this noose whatsoever. Second of all, the inside part of the racetrack itself, no media was there this weekend, anything like that. They were in the media center outside the track, those people that were there and then providing the updates. But you had people that were following. You have people that have connections with those people that are doing the NASCAR pool feed, so to speak. And then you have insiders in NASCAR that are saying, hey, look, one of Richard Petty's team members went into the garage and suspects it's a noose that's hanging there. It doesn't look good. Immediately, it started spreading like wildfire is what happened. And again, it was not from Bubba Wallace, period. And I'm not defending Bubba Wallace in any way. These are the facts that were stated to us and were sent out to us by NASCAR. Did I think that NASCAR maybe overstretched it a little bit in their publicizing of it? Maybe to the point of not having all their ducks lined in a row right before all this stuff happened. But, you know, in one way, it kind of needed to be done. It kind of needed to be almost a little thing of saying NASCAR coming to Talladega, coming to what used to be, you know, a capital, at least at one point or another, there in the South, where this stuff was not allowed. The Confederate flag was allowed, but these things were not allowed. You know, they kind of, I don't know, in one way, they kind of went a little bit overboard with it. But I also counter that with some arguments on that too. We have been told by the media over and over, and we hear Bubba Wallace say, you know, this stuff still goes on in the sport. I'm not going to disagree. It does go on in the sport. I'm going to give you another example too. It doesn't happen just with African-American community. It's happened with women as well in the racing circuit. And if you have forgotten, well, Danica Patrick, I'm just going to put it to you that way. She may not have been the best NASCAR stock car driver that was out there. She gave it the old college try, as we'll say, but they were against her from the beginning. They were against her because of this. It was a different situation with Janet Guthrie years ago. And I'm going to say this. It was a different situation with Wendell Scott years ago, 50 and 60 years ago. We are living in a day and time of where there are some media that are out there that are willing to jump on something and start beating that dead horse to where there's no end about it, just till they can make the name for themselves and they remove themselves from reporting what the news is really all about. And Bubba Wallace has just brought that back to the forefront to tell us things are not as perfect as what you think in NASCAR, especially with the race issue and especially with the gender issue. And, you know, I just think that he's brought some things to our attention that's needed to be brought to our attention. We have thought of that there's no trouble in this sport, but then you hear the fans start complaining about things. They're taking away my flag and they've done this. I'm not going to be able to carry my flag and have all this other stuff. It's not that, folks. It's not the thing about the flag. The flag has become a symbol of hate. It was a historical thing, but it's become a symbol of hate. And you may have your own reasons why you fly it in the infield at a racetrack or anything like that, but it does infringe on other people. And to a point, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, do I feel comfortable going to one of these races, even though you may not be an African-American going to one of these races? Do you feel comfortable going to a race like this? Is this the kind of people that you have at these races? And the majority of them, no, it's not that way.
I want to jump back. One of the comments you made about NASCAR maybe overhyping this. I think what you said as you were explaining that, I think it needs to be reinforced. The word was getting out anyway. Whether NASCAR put a statement out or not, the word was getting out. And at some point, you got to put a statement out once, you know, as you mentioned, the word was trickling out that this was this had happened, that someone had seen this that looked like a noose. And so NASCAR had to get on top of it. Now, I will say, too, the FBI report that I read, I mean, it was a 3 or 4 paragraph statement from the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office down there in Alabama. I mean, it was unequivocal. The report used the word noose several times. I think it was 5 or 6 times. They didn't jump away from this was just a rope hanging off of a garage, a door. You know, what interests me about this is now, and plus now, there's a disconnect still to me with this. I think there's something got to still be answered with this. Mm-hmm. And first, my question was, so we just happened to have assigned the garage that had this hanging since last October to the one African-American driver. But then NASCAR explains that by saying, yeah, I mean, and this makes sense. The garages are assigned by your place in the standings. Okay. Still, it was known that this was hanging there from October and no one did anything about this. That seems, and what I read this afternoon, NASCAR still doing its own investigation, wherever that leads, is probably just way to cover your ass, the old CYA, to say, we're doing an investigation, and then they'll have a report in a week, and it'll say nothing, and then we'll all have shut up by then. Mm-hmm. But it just still seems odd that, oh, it was hanging here since October. That's not exonerating to me. That seems to me to be, wow, we left this hanging up for 9 months? Nobody noticed it. That's a bigger issue to me than the fact that it was Bubba Wallace's garage, because what that means is for 9 months, something that seems clearly to have been left up there to look like a noose. Well, none of us had a problem with it. And if Bubba Wallace's garage, if he had not been assigned that garage, it's still hanging there. Nobody even cares. So that, I think that goes back to what you're saying about Bubba Wallace. Has brought up some issues in NASCAR, both with race and I'm glad you brought in Danica Patrick and women and the issues with women in NASCAR, because I think that we're now discussing these issues in open forum in a way we never have before.
Well, and I go back to watching a video one day, and I think it was a thing on Humpy Wheeler, who used to be the promoter at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and it was his idea, one of his ideas, to get Janet Guthrie to come to race at the Coca-Cola 600 back in the 70s. You know, she'd already raced at Indianapolis. She'd tried to qualify, I think, one other time at Indianapolis. But they brought her there, and, you know, there were a lot of people that were like, NASCAR's not for a woman. The only women that need to be in NASCAR need to be the trophy girls that's there at the end kissing up on the drivers. Well, what are you going to do for trophy girls if you have a female win the race and stuff. I mean, are you going to have trophy boys come in and present the trophy or what? But Janet Guthrie, you know, kind of broke that glass ceiling, so to speak, back in that time. And this is the thing, too. There are people that would look at Danica Patrick and say, well, she's, you know, she's not that smart, or, you know, she only knows how to race a car. Janet Guthrie is, you know, she's got several degrees to her name. She's a very intelligent woman. She knows how to do engineering. She was working in these cars. Humpy Wheeler said at one time, he says, you know, hey, she knows more about a car than some men know about a car. That made a difference to me. And I think that, you know, she kind of, you know, made an impact on the sport, but she kind of walked away from it, so to speak, because it just wasn't the right time. And I think right now for women in NASCAR, especially, you know, you've got your Hallie Deegans that are looking at making their mark and coming up in the sport. But then you have these things like this with Bubba Wallace, and then you have the discussion about Danica Patrick. Robbie Gordon probably was one of the most sexist people toward Danica Patrick that I had ever seen in my life. He said that Danica Patrick would have an unfair advantage at winning a race when she started in stock car racing. And they asked him the question. They said, well, why? I said, well, the car has to weigh a certain thing while you have a driver in there. Well, she weighs less than all of us. So, you know, she's going to have a definite advantage being able to move through the air and stuff going through on the track. And it's like, Robbie, that's the most stupid thing I've ever heard in my life. But of course, how long did Robbie Gordon really last in the sport in a lot of different rides, especially with Morgan McClure Racing over in Abingdon? He did land, I think, four-time beam with Richard Childress for a little while, but, you know, he's back to racing Baja again, right? Back to racing worldwide in the trucks and so forth. It's something we've got to accept. It's, you know, there's the change is coming. The change has already started. I think Bubba maybe needs to kind of tone back a little bit. I think he still needs to go and say, we have problems out there. But sometimes it's like my son brought up today and stuff. He says, you know, I liked Bubba. I liked Bubba at one time. He said, this incident hasn't gotten him upset. The incident that got him upset was when he went over and, you know, some race fans remember things like this. When he went over to Alex Bowman and threw the water in his face, I think last year in one of the races. That started some things. But then he got on the good side of people when he wrecked Kyle Busch at Watkins Glen and he put him off the track. So, I mean, it's a love-hate relationship, so to speak, right now. And, you know, Bubba may not be Dale Earnhardt by any means, but, you know, he's definitely got this love-hate relationship right now with a lot of the fans. Some are wanting change. Some are wanting things to just stay the same like they always have been for the last 50, 60 years.
As long as the hate is because he bumped your favorite driver, which is the reason to hate any driver, that's okay. A lot of the hate has nothing to do with that, unfortunately. But yeah, it'd be a great day when we can talk about Bubba Wallace and say, man, he knocked that guy on the wall and the crowd was booing him. Because right now, he could probably knock a guy on the wall and people be afraid to boo him, and then he could win a race and there'd be people booing him because he's the African-American driver. One day, maybe there'll be a day when a woman or a African-American driver will win and we'll either cheer or boo them because they're either the Kyle Busch, like, and you just hate them no matter what, or they're the Dale Earnhardt Sr. and you love them no matter what. I mean, that kind of thing. So, we can root for that to be the case one day. Hey, let's actually talk about what was actually a very thrilling race.
Yeah, it was.
On Monday, as it turns out, with the rain on Sunday. And we've been dealing with weather issues ever since the restart from COVID-19 about a month ago. And then even on Monday, there was a delay because of weather. But man, oh man, what a finish. You know, it was great turning that on the last 50 laps or so. You know, you keep waiting for the big one. The drivers and their crew chiefs are all waiting for the big one. The fuel mileage became an issue late. Some folks got caught up in that. You saw some great strategy. I think Ryan Blaney seemed to play this well. He was kind of sitting back and trying to conserve fuel and then made a late push. A lot of great strategy got down the stretch there. I hope I haven't stole your thunder. I broke down some of that, but that was a great, to me. And then the finish with that two lap, the overtime finish, there was a lot going on that race on Monday.
There was, and I really liked the fact that this race ended, so to speak, with a free-for-all, of course, so that going into overtime. But the thing that I love the most, especially like you mentioned, the 50 laps or so counting down to the end of the race, and then you start hearing on the radios from some of the drivers, they don't know how much gas is in their car. They have no idea. They just know that when they pulled into the pits and they've come up with the gas can, they've popped it in there and stuff, that they've gotten everything out of that can and they've got enough fuel to be able to make it. But when you hear your crew chief start saying to you, you know, I don't know if we're going to have enough. It's like they said to Bubba Wallace, they told him, said, you know, I think you're going to be 4 to 6 laps short. You start talking to some of the others out there. And then they started playing this poker game that was out there amongst all these different drivers, because I'm going to admit it, some of these drivers, they monitor, they know what's going on with some of the other teams and they know how things are playing out, and they're going to come back. One's going to run down to the end of pit road and say somebody's down there, and they're going to make the comment. They're going to say, hey, so-and-so only has maybe about 5 more laps to go on fuel and stuff. So our plan is right now, let's not get behind him, because if he loses fuel, he's going to check up. We're going to go right into the rear end of him and stuff. Stay away from so-and-so. Stay away from that person out there on the track. And, you know, Ryan Blaney just played it smart. I can't say enough about how he played it smart on Sunday by just kind of holding back. And the Penske Fords were really getting great gas mileage all together. You know, Logano had did well most of the day, and then also Brad Keselowski was there. But, you know, then you had Chase Elliott made the run. He got up there to the front, and then of all things, it was just like something you'd see out of a nightmare. He just all of a sudden turns sideways, hits the wall, and then he's out. They try to run at least for a couple more laps and not able to do it. And so he's out of the race. And so Ryan Blaney, you're kind of wondering who else is going to be able to pull this off. And you see all these other cars starting to make the run down pit road, and some of them stay out on the track to say, let's see how far we can take this. And Ryan Blaney just kind of held back, and I call it this way, he kind of goosed the engine enough to get the gas through to where it would just do enough, shut off the engine. He'd coast around in different places and things like that to where he needed to, and then flip that engine back on. It was great fuel consumption. This is something we normally see out of Michigan. When we go to Michigan in August, especially with the humidity, the temperature, and so forth, that's what we run into. But we saw it at Talladega this time around. It was a great race right down to the very end. And Ryan Blaney just he held on to his cookies at the right moment. He came across the start-finish line, but it was only by just, you know, fractions of an inch is what he came across right there at the end.
Yeah, that picture, the photo finish picture was close. And then you see who was in third, who crossed the finish line backwards. I mean,
I'm trying to remember which one that was that came across. But yeah, he came across.
The rear end. It reminded me of the Talladega Nights movie, you know, pretty much where. And man, they were you couldn't ask for a better finish. I mean, I know, you know, the purists would say, you know, this overtime and the green white checkered and all that is contrived, but man, I heard one of the guys when they were the broadcast was playing the radio transmissions. The guy said, "Well, this is basically a drag race now. I mean,
yeah,
a 2-lap drag race on that track, all the strategy involved and what lines you were on, and they were going 4 wide." It was just like, you knew, like the wreck that happened after they got the white flag, and you knew if something happened behind the leaders, it was going to finish no matter what. But that a sort of big one happened behind them, and then they go across the line, bumping and grinding all the way to the finish. That was what NASCAR needed. That I mean, as far as the quality of the race, I know with everything else going on in NASCAR, but for all the fans who were watching, that was a heck of an ending.
Yes, it was. And you know, you've got to really credit that new aero package, too, that NASCAR has come up with. And, you know, they tapered down a little plate, so to speak. You know, I know we've always talked about restrictor plate racing and so forth, but they have tapered down a plate that's almost – it's so small, it just lets enough gas through to where they can go and they can really pop it. They were making speeds at about 200-and-some miles an hour on the straight stretch and so forth. But when it came to the horsepower that they needed, they had to depend on that car to be able to provide them with enough downforce. And you could see it in a couple of times when these cars would get up one beside of the other, they could take just a little bit of air off of them and they get a little squirrely. Ryan Blaney had one of the best saves that I've ever seen. He had, you know, I thought he was gone there early on before the, especially before the, about the 50 laps were left to go in the race. I thought, man alive, he's gone. He's gonna spin this out. There's going to be a big one here. He grabbed a hold of it, and I don't see how in the world he was able to hold that together. But, you know, you got to give credit to that new aero package. I think that's a lot of it. These drivers are starting to get used to that a little bit more of this aero package. And this is a car that they can set up, and they can kind of take this to a Bristol, but then they can also take this to a Talladega with a few little minor changes to it instead of building a whole new car.
So much attention on Talladega for both a great race, but obviously all the track stuff. I haven't paid any attention to what's next. What's next for NASCAR this coming weekend?
Well, this weekend, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. We have our big doubleheader at Pocono. So they're going to be racing a Saturday race sometime around 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the afternoon. And then they are going to turn around and race again on Sunday starting about 4 o'clock. So NASCAR is doing the double dip, so to speak, at Pocono. This was already planned in the schedule. This had nothing to do with, you know, the COVID-19 thing that we've gone through. But they had planned on this happening to see what was going to happen. And so now you've got, I think you've got some truck races going to be taking place. I think you might have an Xfinity race that's going to be taking place. But then you're going to have two cup races back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday. So it'll be interesting for this race, too. Everybody's talking about the downforce package, the aero package, especially at Pocono. There are times of where you can open that car up, and I mean, it's going to be screaming down through there on the straightaway, but then get into one of the corners, and then you start into the triangle part. You know, there's been some great races there at Pocono before, and I think one of them I saw just a few minutes ago before we came to record and everything to sit down, the Jeremy Mayfield coming from behind and winning against Dale Earnhardt. And I still bring this up, and, you know, it kind of touches back on maybe Bubba Wallace a little bit or some of these things and the way the drivers are. But I don't know how many people remember when Jeremy Mayfield in 2000 beat Dale Earnhardt Sr. at Pocono. And when he did, he gave him a slight little bump on the rear end, and just enough for Earnhardt to lose control of the car. Mayfield comes around, takes the checkered flag, and then, as we will always remember, as Mayfield shaking his arm coming down the stretch, a hand goes out and the middle finger is displayed by Dale Earnhardt. And then they ask him in the pits later, they said, you know, were you trying to get something across to Jeremy Mayfield? He said, no. He said, I was just telling him he was number one in my book. So, I mean, that's one of the best races I remember at Pocono in a long time. There's been some other good ones, but I just remember that one so much of the young, up-and-coming Jeremy Mayfield, whose life, of course, has kind of fallen apart since then, but made that big pass on Dale Earnhardt. It's a racetrack where first-time winners have won before. Ryan Blaney won his first race there at Pocono, so we might see a first-time winner there this weekend.
For our viewers and our listeners out there, follow Rod on Twitter, and he's got all kinds of updates on during the week and then, of course, during the race as well. And we, I say Twitter and Facebook, and then we share a lot of that on our Augusta Free Press Facebook page on race day. We have two this weekend, so that'll be a lot of excitement to keep up with. NASCAR is doing a good thing for us. They're giving us sports fans something to keep up with. You know, just hopefully we can focus on the track this weekend, and that'll be a good thing. Hey, Rod, thank you for your time as always, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Appreciate it. Oh, by the way, congratulations on baseball coming back, too. I got the news last night and heard everybody seems to be overjoyed over it. 60 games, but, you know, I guess you'll take anything you can get right now at this point.
Hey, 60 games is greater than zero, so we'll take what we can get and run with it. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We'll see what happens.
And I are both. We have something to look forward to there as well. And in this meantime, though, you know, obviously, you and I have been doing these NASCAR podcasts for several years now. I'm starting to actually understand strategy now, which is, it's getting scary now. I'm actually like a junior reporter to you now. I used to just ask you questions and learn from your wisdom, but you know, I'm learning a little bit about the sport now, and I'm getting hooked. So danger zone time for my wife, because she's going to lose me to even more sports if that's possible.
Well, she's getting into it too. I mean, she sat there. I mean, one night she put a tweet up on Twitter, and I was like, oh my gosh, I think the bug has finally hit her for the last few laps of that race. I think it finally hit some excitement there for her too.
Exactly. So yeah, thanks to NASCAR, we got baseball. Hey, it's a good thing. Rod, again, thanks for your time. Great talking with you.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.